Session number 14972, Richard Atkinson, Reel 4.
Mr. Atkinson, Reel 4. You arrived in France, Mr. Atkinson. How had you felt about going abroad and possibly the danger?
No, danger never come. You didn't know. You hadn't been told about danger. It was an experience. Never been abroad before in our lives, and it was one of those things, you know. Well, we were told that France was dirty and smelly and don't drink the water, but otherwise it was an experience.
And did France turn up to be that description?
Yes. Again, there we are. We're all some little colliery villages, or little villages miles away from anywhere, and you only had the local people, and it was smelly, and you could go to the Stamland by Poms and Fritz, egg and chips, and things like Abadapas. But our pay was only 50 francs a week, because the French private, our French army pay was so low, we had to come down to their level, and we only had 50 francs a week, which was nothing, with a few drinks. We weren't allowed spirits, we could only drink beer. The ranks wasn't allowed spirits.
How did the French population treat you in the time you were there?
Oh, we didn't have much to do with them. Couldn't speak the language, didn't have anything to do with them, just march past them or walk past them. And you went in the town, you owned the town, the British army, you owned the town, you swaggered around. Or swagger canes, and they thought of the bee's knees, really. But we didn't have much to do with the French people. When the balloon went up, when the refugees and that evacuated, you sort of more contact then.
So you arrived at Cherbourg and you set off on a different route to meet the battalion.
Transport went by road via Limans. Rouen, Lille, I think Lens were finished up in, I would say Lille.
Where were you stopping at night?
Well, we stopped at Limans, and we got ourselves organised and lined up in convoy drills and, don't know, wasn't that? And I think Rouen was the next one, the next night.
Were you staying in a camp? Or?
No, you sleep in the back of the trucks. No, you just bedded down in the back of the trucks. And each vehicle in those days had an engine car. It was a beautiful quilted heavy rug, about 6 foot by 4 foot. You're supposed to put it over the engine, the bonnet would keep the hose blanket again, as usual, to keep it warm for the next day. But what you did, you slept on that. That was too good for the cover of earth, bonnet of a radiator. So you slept on that. It was beautiful.
Were you carrying anything in your truck?
Yes, carrying all the equipment and the brands and all there, yes.
So you had all that with you? Yes.
It was the only time it was out your sight was when I went aboard the ship in Southampton and you picked up at Cherbourg. And you were on the docks when they slung them off with the cranes, because there wasn't no drive on. You picked your truck up straight away, so the only people I could touch it was dockers, which I don't think they did, because I never heard any reports of it.
So you stayed overnight at these staging points?
Yes. Refuel your vehicle, checked it, and get ready for next year.
How did you settle down to driving on the other side of the road?
Well, it just did. But because there's only us on the road and you're in convoy and you couldn't stray, you had to keep your distance, like 50 yards or whatever it was from the vehicle in front. So then I constantly up and down the lane, and any crossroad you come to, whichever way his bike was pointing, you went that way. So if it was pointing left, you turned left, it was straight on, you went straight on, whichever way it was pointing. And he was just sitting on the bike, but you couldn't, you couldn't do anything other than that. But the French was mad. They drove with the horns and the lights, and they were balmy, but we had never seen. And we weren't very experienced ourselves, so it didn't make much difference. It was all mad together sort of style. But they had full headlamps and everything on their cars, but they only painted blue for aerial precautions, where we had little masks you couldn't see, so we had to stop at night because you couldn't see the vehicle in front of you.
What were French roads like?
Bad. Shocking.
Did you have any accidents?
No, not that I know of. There could have been slight bumps, turning into a gateway or something like that, but nothing to write home about. But there were mostly cobblestones and that. And then when we got up towards Leyland Run, well, the road was dead straight and lines were popular, you know, and you could see for miles and miles. Oh, God help the fellows on route marches, because you could see forevermore. But they were straight and cobblestone, rough, bumpy, you know, and the vehicles wasn't sprung, they were uncomfortable.
You were driving then through that winter. What was it like?
Oh, it was atrocious. Terrible winter. Never. It was really, really bitter, steep snow and everything. And the trucks had no cabs on. They only had a canvas cover and side canvas doors. And the windscreen was like a little half piece of glass. And you lay it down and put up. So you always finished up with frozen eyebrows and frozen lips. But you had gauntlets. You had beautiful leather gauntlets, a leather jerkin, stuff like that. You're pretty well equipped. By now, so that's the funny part. We could have all this. Yeah, we'll start off with first world uniforms. And, I think we're being young and keen and daft. It didn't really affect you. But it was cool. You finished up with white eyebrows and your lips was chapped and frozen and everything. But it was that hard that the lads was digging anti-tank ditches and that stuff that couldn't get the picks and shovels into them. Because we weren't allowed into Belgium, we had to stop on the Belgian border. I think it was a place called Hempt or somewhere like that, where we were, somewhere like that. And that's where we're digging the ditches.
On your journey, how did you obtain food? Were you carrying it with you?
Yes. Yeah, you had an unexpired portion of the day's rations, which is bully beef and a biscuit, and your water bottle. And then when you stopped at night time, because the cooks would brew up for you, or somebody would brew up and you make tea.
Or should have cooks with you on your wagons?
Convoy. See, there's no call catering then. There was just something that was in the regiment that was cook. You say, and you had a Dixie and a pump and you made a cup of tea, a stove.
Where did you eventually come up with the battalion?
Lens, I think it was, a pit village called Lens, outside Lille. Because we used to go into Lille for our time off. So it must have been, I know it was a pit village because pit heap and a pit thing was there, and I think we used to go to the pit baths for washers, I think. So it was on Lille and Homs and Lens that way, and you know, that's Doolia, around that area, but I couldn't.
What date or time would this be?
When we first got there, that would be about the middle of January, around about the second week in January, sort of like that. That's when the battalion sort of settled in and started digging in and whatnot.
What was your role then in this process of digging and so on?
Oh, well, we were just general duties like then, supplying rations, coal, and police patrol. If you did a police patrol, you had the policeman with you, the regimental policeman, and stuff like that. It was just, actually, you weren't with the companies very much then. They had their gear with them, their blankets and their weapons and that. So your truck was empty. It was just general duties, utility things, sort of. Anything that was going, you had to do it. Atkinson, you're free, you go and do it.
Were the people of northern France different in any way from those that the other areas that had come through?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, it was pit villages, same as the pit villages here. And there was a more, they'll give you a coffee. I mean, not that you'd drink it, you couldn't understand it, but they would at least speak to you and whatnot. Now, what I found in Normandy, they didn't want to know you. The Germans was better than what we were in Normandy. Because the Germans didn't trouble them, we did. We brought them death and destruction. But in France, it was different. The one gushy, you know what I mean? But if you went anywhere, yeah. I mean, I went to a French, we went out one day, and I just saw a thing, it was French, and they apologised and gave me money back. It was all French, it was no good to us. And I thought it was an English picture. English. I saw this Clark Gable or somebody outside or whatever it was. But that was at the open Lens or Lille or whatever it was.
What kind of leisure activities did you have?
Oh, just what you made. You had to make your own. At night time you'd naffy. You always had a naffy and whatnot with you. You either went there and you had a drink or a... Because, as I say, you want low spirits. Or you could go to the Stanley and have a beer in a place like that. But you usually went in and had chips and egg. which you could make one a stand on a stand. I go to the pastry shop. We used to look for the baker shops. Used to have some nice pastries, mind you, know, apple turnovers. But that's all the money you had. So you didn't have much. You just made your own. And there was enter concerts by this time. So they used to take us to Lille and Revere, a place where we, some turn would be there. Like, you know, I'd form, yeah, whatever it was, we're on a go at the time. But you always had somebody.
Was there a problem with VD and French ladies who
yes.
might carry prostitutes?
Well, it wasn't so noticeable in France this time because we're green. But, I mean, the first words, the colonel got us together and says, look, now you're going to meet brothels for the first time, and, you know, I'll be very careful. We couldn't afford it, to be honest. And the officers was the first in the queue. So, I mean, you know, it was... but they could afford it, we couldn't. We had a look at it, but we couldn't afford it. The madam, you know, in the shop, but well, there was no VD because you couldn't speak, you couldn't fraternize, you know, things like that. But you got lectures every Saturday on it, VD. It was a self inflicted wound, you pay your own punishment, your parents' money be stopped. You know, it was drilled into you. It wasn't over about the Middle East and those places when we started to get more money and when those things came up.
What was the health of the battalion like at this time?
The health? Well, it was, I would say it was healthy. You never saw no sickness. We got like scabies, you know, you got runs of things like that. I mean, the fellow next to me, he got scabies, and he was the cleanest man you ever met in your life, and he couldn't understand it, but it was one of those things that happened, you know, things like that. And you got, and all of a sudden everybody, we painted what we call blue unction. It was this stuff that prevented, and we looked like, you know, cook with a clown. We all had this blue stuff, but it was a universal thing, like the number 9. You went with a bad foot and you got painted blue. But I would say the health was good. It was just these things happened. Run through lice, it run through. Once it came, you all had to be deloused. You know, through the steam thing.
Did this happen to you?
Oh yes, it happened to us. It happened to us in Tiverton and in England.
Where were you? Where were you accommodated? Up in this Lens area, where were you living?
Well, I can remember once we lived in a street of houses. I don't know whether people still live in them. And another time, we lived in a factory, an empty factory. Things like that, you know. It was transport was always separate from the battalion. It was always away, you know. When I say away, you know, half a mile, quarter of a mile away. But they used to look for a factory where there's a petrol pump, so they could be supplied and stuff like that. But if not, you just slept in the trucks. And if you're with a company, you just bumped down with a company wherever they were.
And were you feeding at company level as well?
Yes.
Transport people?
Yes. Oh, you just had to feed them with a company. But as I say, if you're with a company and they're built, say, if it was a French barn, which wasn't clean, you're sleeping in the truck. And you would just sleep on the back of the truck, put the canvas cover up, and they had a mobile cover thing where you could drape it over, and, you know, and you'd sleep in there. And you knew it was just as cool as what they were, but it was clean.
How did you keep clean yourselves, washing and so forth?
Well, you only had cold water. And never forget the first time they took us for a bath. French village. And it was like a big square pond thing in the middle. And on one side there's about 5 women washing clothes. And it says to us, strip off and get in. And we couldn't, you know, we says, well, never mind them. So we stripped off and got on the other side of this pond. It was about 2 foot deep and had a bath. Could just go water running through. And the French woman was washing their clothes, laughing at us at the other side. And that was our weekly bath. But you had to have a bath once a week and sign the book. They made sure. And that was if, then they got mobile baths. It got organised a bit after that. But, you know, primitive, but it worked. They'd scrub you with a brush if you didn't get in. So you had to, whether women there or not.
And you'd have, presumably, the army rations with you now.
Yes, completely army, you know, the Russians. See, I'll move, probably draw C company, go to the quartermaster and draw C company's rations, and he doled them out to the cookhouse, and he said what the menu was that day and how much was used and whatnot. See, because the favourite trick was to skimp and try and get a sort of a bit of reserve ration from, you know, in case things went wrong, and the quartermaster would find out and jump on and confiscate it. So they found out, don't try and store, feed them. But, you know, that's it. There's all, them's all army tricks that happens. But they would, you know, cut down a little bit, you know, get a little bit less spoon, try and get a, say, a spare meal in case things went wrong, which, good thinking, really, but it didn't work.
And you could supplement this food by canteen or estaminets.
Yeah, yeah. What you bought outside was all right, but you are well warned not to touch the water.
The drink, what was French
beer
alcohol like?
Well, we were only allowed beer. It wouldn't sell. Officers and sergeants and above was allowed spirits. I think a sergeant was allowed a bottle a week or something like that, but we weren't allowed below sergeants, no taboo. So we only had beer. Well, the French beer was like water. And I suppose they'd rip us off and charge us over the odds and whatnot. But you could buy beer in the Laffey, of course.
Did you get into the cheap wine?
No, they wouldn't sell it to you because, for a start off, they weren't allowed. They might give you some of their own, but then again, if you're caught, it wasn't worth the risk because the army was strict on that. You could be as drunk as you like, and they weren't bad. They'd only find you. But if they're caught, you're buying spirits, and that would drop on you like a ton of logs.
How long were you in this situation, up on the Lille Lens area?
Oh, until the balloon went up on 10th of May.
I think you said the men were digging. What were they digging?
Big anti-tank ditches on the Belgian border. 9-foot ditch to stop tanks getting over.
Were there ever any views?
We walked away and left them. On the 10th of May, when the balloon went up, in the middle of the night, we went into Belgium, to Brussels. We left all them. What we spent months and months digging, we just walked away from.
Did you have any important visitors coming to see you prior to the day that the Germans invaded?
No, I can't remember any.
No. Inspections and guards. You were on one hand a soldier and the other hand a driver. Did you have both inspections, both for your uniform and equipment and for your wagon?
Oh, yes.
How regular was that?
Oh, you could get a rifle inspection every day. You know, when you joined the army, they said, no, this is your rifle, and it's your best friend, look after it. Sleep with it, it's the only friend you'll ever have in the army. And they made sure of that. Could be inspected every day, rifle inspection. Could be the first bit of the day, rifle inspection. But a clothing inspection once a week. Or depending on the QM, if you thought the uniforms are getting shabby, you might have a clothing inspection. So you can either don a pair of trousers or get a new pair of trousers. But
Was that done in the traditional way of laying
yes.
it out?
No, that was a kit inspection. Kit inspection once a week. Make sure you had any laid out. Especially if you're in a barracks, in a barn or anything like that. But see, then again, the transport didn't bother, because unless we had a proper thing. But a clothing inspection, the captain quartermaster would decide he'd have a clothing inspection. If he most probably get an issue in your uniforms or something. And you line them up, and you go around with his sergeant and the company colour sergeant and decide. Now, see, I'm driving the captain quartermaster. One of these tricks again where you learn which is the best, you see. And he insisted, well, I could just go to the sergeant and give him a new suit and get it pressed, and I was immaculate. And you go on a clone parade, as I say, this clone parade, and the lads would be lined up, they'd been digging tiny tank ditches, and they're up to their neck in mud, and they're raggy, and they're darned their socks. They'd be lined up on they'd been digging dentures, and their trousers, maybe holding in the knee, and raggy, their socks would be darned, or been darned. You line them up, and you say, first of all, I'll be standing behind them. Immaculate, pressed suit, and you say, you can darn that trouser, or he can have a new pair of socks. Yes, give him a new tunic, that one's a bit raggy. You can mend that, and he decided what they had. I suppose it was on his knees where he had any stores, really. But I could, that was the fellas used to go balmy because I could just go to the stores and these socks, and say, I got the thickest. No, the fitters, give him one of the fitters. They got what they were handed. But that was one of the perks of the job.
Truck inspection, what form did that take?
No. If there was an inspection coming, you were well warned and you got them washed and polished. You used to wash them, usually you washed them every night. You found a stream or something like that, you could wash them. And then we got this caper of mixing paraffin and drop oil, engine oil, and it got a shine on. And it was easy to keep cleaning, but it stopped it, you see, because that would be matte. But if there was a big inspection coming off, you are well warned and you are all lined up on a square, a street, somebody, you know, wheels exactly in line up, and somebody woke up and look at them and just walk past a casual thing. But that was a vehicle inspection. But as regards maintenance and that, if there's anything wrong, you told them and your unit fitter saw to it, there and then, or whatever's needed. But you had to keep them clean and whatnot. See, you had no tools. The first thing they did was to take all the tools off you. The fitters had them. They said because tools in the wrong hands did more damage. So whatever went wrong, you had to ring for the fitter, contact the fitter and get him. And he'd come and put it right. But there was no trouble over there.
Did you have duties to perform?
Oh, yes.
What duties would you as a driver, transport person have?
It's got ceremonial duties and whatnot.
But any of them?
Well, you still, the transport had its own guard duties to perform over, if there are trucks anywhere, say four trucks together, you had to have a guard on it.
And was this a ceremonial type thing where you had to parade for these guards?
Well, you parade at 6 o'clock and the officer inspector make sure you're respectable and you're mounted properly. And you come around through the night and check it that you weren't all having a kick and whatnot. But if it wasn't that, you just have a picket. Well, you're on duty, but you just walk round. You know, you did your two on, four off, but you just walked round. But the other one was two on and four off with your rifle and your... But you still got picked for company guards, or you still had to take your turn on quarter guard and whatnot, a 24-hour duty guard. But the sort of... kept you off 24-hour guards in case the transport was wanted, but you always you could count on getting a 12-hour guard, no trouble, once every 3 or 4 days. Transport or not, as I said, you had an infantry man. That's a secondary job. Cooks and everything, everybody was exactly the same. Didn't matter what you were, signaller, you did your turn.
Who was the battalion commander?
I think was Swinburne took us across. I think, was it Swinburne? I think it was Lieutenant Colonel Swinburne. Got it somewhere, but he was a territorial officer and he was relieved. I didn't like a territorial officer and it was a regular brought in. And I don't know who he would be. I know a friendship with Brigadier Churchill. He was a 151 Brigadier.
Did you still have the same company commander at this point?
Yes. Yes, same company commander, same officers. Ridley, Cunningham.
No. Do you recall what you were doing the night that the news came through that Germans had invaded Holland, Belgium?
Yes, I do. It wasn't a bad night. And we had been out on coal fatigues, and I come in, and it says to me, like, now that truck was wanted first thing in the morning, so, and I just finished getting it all swept out and everything. So searchlights went up and video lights. I mean, we were nowhere near the fighting, but these video lights went up and we says, oh, what's on here? Is that something happened? And then the orders came to march at 6 o'clock in the morning, so we're going to go, we're away.
What date was this?
May the 10th.
How did you feel then? Because up to now there'd been the phony war.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel now when you realise, well, now this is starting? See, the balloon's gone up.
Yeah. Well, they dashed us up to Brussels. We got into the outskirts of Brussels, and he was bombing it. You know, Stukas and whatnot. And that's when we got our first baptism, and we realised, it's totally different. This is killing feet. You know, you can get slightly damaged here. And that's when we realised it. And then, of course, they marched back. We didn't do anywhere. March back.
What were your feelings when the first shells, bombs, whatever it was, that came close to you?
Oh, I think fear, petrified more than anything else. Never seen anything like before. You know, you hear bombs whistling down, but never.
Do you remember the journey up through Belgium? How were the Belgians receiving you on that journey going through?
No, they weren't. They just ignored us. Just drove in, they ignored us. They didn't want us there. I mean, they stopped us going in. Because they're neutral. And then, as I say, then the next thing, when he sort of chased them out, and they were giving up, all these Belgian soldiers with a red blanket around them, charging away back
You saw these Belgian soldiers?
Oh, yes. They all had red army blankets, one each around their shoulder, and they were scouring back as fast as they could. Well, we were marching back. The lads were marching. 90 miles or something, we marched back.
Where were you in this marching?
With the company. I was...
Same situation?
Yes, I was situation. That's where I was behind them. And they said, you know, 3 mile an hour, 4 mile an hour. Your foot was sore, you know, the one position they got. And they said, you know, you keep the pace because you had that stuff on. And they were marching. They were marching in front of you. And if anybody was really pissed and that, you could drop off and drop on the truck for a little bit and sort of get, and back off again. But they didn't dwell on it. They made them off again. And that's when we marched back to Second Provine and Vimy Ridge.
That particular march, did you have problems with the refugees on the roads?
Yes, yeah. It was beginning to clog up then. And that was the start of it.
And how did that strike you with these people?
We couldn't comprehend it. It didn't, you know, we couldn't understand why they were running away from their homes and that. They were just blocking the road and we couldn't get somewhere. And they literally shoved our way through them, you know, forced them out the road. Or if you stopped anywhere, you had to sort of chase them. And then when the scum stukas came over and shot machine gun, they used to dive into the hedges and the road was clear. You could move. Of course, we dived in the hedges as well with them.
What do you think of Stukas attacking civilians?
Petrifying. Never. It's demoralised. It was a demoralising thing. The first time it actually happened to us was on Vimy. No, actually,
yeah. Personally. Before we come to Vimy, because that is a special thing I want to deal with. Trying to concentrate on this withdrawal and the problems that you are having with the withdrawal. Soldiers can basically walk around people, but you kind of drive
you couldn't walk around because there was that many of them, and you haven't literally forced your way through them. You know, literally shoving, like the lads were shoving to one side because we were close enough to the road was blocked, and it was everything, horses and carts, prams, barras, and you name it, trundling along with book, you know. It was literally chaos.
Did they show any anger towards you because you were pulling away and leaving them in effect?
I don't think they realised. I think they were as stunned as what we were, to be honest. You couldn't knock sense in them. You couldn't make them understand. They couldn't understand you. All you could use is a big stick.
Did you feel a sympathy?
No.
Towards them?
No. Self-preservation. No, never entered your mind. And when you went through anywhere, they'd been bombed and all the poles and the hose was shattered and the wires was lying around the streets and you're driving through them. He just says, oh, well, that's theirs, not mine. You know, he says, oh, that's unlucky for some sort of style, and that was it.
It was quite hot weather at this time.
Yes, it was hot weather by this time.
Were there many men falling out? And there were tremendous marches.
Quite a few, you know. It was a hell of a march for them when you think. Because you weren't getting fed, and there's no feeding arrangements. You're just heart attack and whatnot as you're going along. And there was quite a few dropping onto the trucks, but they weren't encouraging us. Saying, oh, you know, you're all right now, the sergeant, go on, get back in. See, because I suppose they encouraged it, they all dropped out. So it wasn't encouraged, but there was a few, and they were leading with them, but for a few, maybe half an hour or something, they got themselves pulled around and back. But the fellas wanted the march anyway, because all of them hits.
Were the men's morale being affected by this retreat?
No, I don't think the morale was affected at any time. With our lot.
Did you feel you wanted to turn and fight?
No. Yes. You're a bit... You're lost, you see. You didn't know what was happening. And somebody said, oh, this paratroopers dropping amongst you and something like that. It was all false rumours and whatnot. But you felt incompetent because you didn't know anything and you weren't told anything. But...
Where were you staying at nights on this retreat?
Roadside. Pulling off from the... wherever you were.
And the men, they...
Same place, same. Just better down where they were. There was no... there's no billeting. If there was a place they could get into, they got into, they could forage. But they couldn't go away.
Was there opportunities, or was it happening, of course? Any looting of houses, empty houses that you were going past? The villages you were going through?
Well, yes. Yeah, I'll be telling the life. I said, no, you're diving in for wine and stuff. And, you know, I'd see what was going. And you might be like, you know, bottles of preserved pears and stuff. Like, I don't know. Oh, yes. That's if you stopped anywhere near them. But, I mean, you couldn't stop and go. But if you stopped anywhere near it, yeah, you are lucky you could dive in. But, yeah.
Well, the basic march discipline was
strong.
Good order.
Good order, strong, yes. There was no danger, anything about anything like that.